Okay, welcome to the Shiur Naksava Kabbalah Parsha Shmos. I wanted to try to do tonight two pieces Naksava Kabbalah, both of which address issues in Parsha Shmos that could be understood as problematic, either problematic, let's call it morally, ethically, or problematic theologically. And we'll see how the Ksava Kabbalah, in really giving a novel interpretation of the words themselves in the Chumash, addresses through linguistics, you know, each of these issues. So the first piece of the Ksava Kabbalah I want to take a look at is in Perek Gimel Pasuk Chof Beis. Ribbono Shel Olam has revealed himself to Moshe Rabbeinu at this Sneh, and he's telling him what's going to happen. I'm going to take the Jewish people, thank you, out of Mitzrayim. And the in Pasuk Chof Beis we read, V'sho'a lo isho mishchento migor ha'seisa klei chesef uklei zov usmolos. Each Jewish woman will ask from her non-Jewish neighbor to borrow gold and silver vessels and clothing. You will hand over these items to your children, sons and daughters. What's benitzaltem es mitzrayim? So the Rashi quotes kitargumo utrokinun, just like the Targum says, you should empty out Egypt. Right, it's somewhat analogous to the English phrase, you'll wipe them out, you'll clean them out. It's a little bit disturbing on some level, you know, the notion that the Jewish people, after gaining their freedom, you know, would be focused on, let's loot the Egyptians, you know, of their possessions, let's take away their gold and their silver and the like. You know, it calls to mind, it's obviously not exactly the same thing, but it calls to mind, you know, when there's rioting, you know, because people are upset at something that went on in a city, so people riot, you know, to show their displeasure, and somehow in the course of the rioting they also smash store windows and make off with all kinds of goodies and valuable items and the like. You know, isn't it sufficient that the Jewish people are leaving Mitzrayim? What's this idea of looting them, you know, taking all of their money, or taking much of their money on the way out? Why is that such an important aspect of the geula, of the redemption? The Ksava Kabbalah doesn't quote what I'm about to quote, but I think it ties into what the Ksava Kabbalah is going to say. The Gemara in Masechta Brachos mentions a pasuk later on in Parshas Bo, where Moshe Rabbeinu speaks to Klal Yisrael, and he says, or Hashem speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he says, "Dabru na be'ozne ha'am, please speak in the ears of the Jewish people, v'yishalu ishmei Yisrayehu, and they should all ask, you know, to get these gold and silver vessels from their Egyptian neighbors." And the Gemara in Masechta Brachos comments, "Dabru na." Why does it say please ask the Jewish people to ask their Egyptian neighbors for these items? So the Gemara Masechta Brachos says, you know, the Jews were reluctant to do so. They said, look, we're leaving Egypt, you know, we have to also, you know, take their gold and silver on the way out. Let's just get out of here, you know, like, why do we have to, you know, take their money on the way out? And the Ribbono Shel Olam is very insistent that the Jewish people should ask the Egyptians for their gold and the silver in order to fulfill the promise that Hashem made to Avraham Avinu, v'achareichen yetzu b'rechush gadol, that the Jewish people will leave Mitzrayim with, you know, tremendous bounty, with a lot of gold and silver and the like. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, I insist that the Jewish people ask their neighbors to provide valuable objects as the Jewish people leave Mitzrayim. It's very, very important that they do so. They really don't have the right. You know, it wouldn't be right for the Jewish people to not ask for the gold and silver from the Egyptians, which just compounds the issue. Okay, you know, like, why is this such a big deal? Why is it so important for the Jewish people to davka ask for gold and silver from the Egyptians on their way out? So the focus of the Aksava Kabbalah is on the term Vinitzaltem. Vinitzaltem es Mitzrayim, which again the Targum says Utrokinum es Mitzrayim. You should empty out the Egyptians. Right? You should empty out Egypt. Writes the Aksava Kabbalah. The Nira Li she'ena mechuvan bozesh yovozu es kol asher lo Mitzrayim ad she'ni chumrei kol mikaspamu zehavam. You know, the intent of the pasuk is not, as people often interpret it, to despoil or to clean out the Egyptians such that they have no gold and silver left. That's not the intention of Vinitzaltem es Mitzrayim. Kemo sheregilin lefarsha. Shilin yon zeh hoyo yosteroi lomar loshon bi'er. If the intent of the pasuk was to clean out the Egyptians, in other words, to empty them out of all their valuables and possessions, the shoresh, the verb that would have been more appropriate, that would be livaer. Livaer often means to burn or to annihilate, to clean something out. So, for instance, he quotes the pasuk in Melachim, uvi'arti acharei beis Yerovam kasher yivaer agolol. Right? When the house of Yerovam, the kings ruling over northern Israel, were going to be wiped out. So the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I will erase them just as one rids oneself of, you know, feces or other, you know, waste materials, right? You know, the house of Yerovam is doomed for destruction. I will clear them out, I will empty them out, and the term over there which is used is livoer, uviarti. So that would be the more appropriate term to use over here, if the point was to say that the Egyptians will be, you know, separated from all of their valuables. Va'od, dekvar yodanu sheneshu b'Mitzrayim tachshitei zav v'kesef avonim l'rov ma'od. Ad she'omer rabbeinu bizas hayom hoisa yoser gedolo mibizas Mitzrayim. And in any case, says Aksava Kabbalah, if we were to interpret the term vayinatzlu es Mitzrayim or vinitzaltem es Mitzrayim, as they will empty out the Egyptians to the point where there's no more gold or silver in Egypt, we actually know that that's not true according to Chazal. Chazal say that when the Egyptians were pursuing the Jews through the Yamsuf, and the Yamsuf came crashing down on them, so the Egyptians had brought with them a huge amount of gold and silver and the like, and the Jews took more away from the Yamsuf than they took away from Mitzrayim when they left it on that Pesach. So, in other words, even that which the Egyptians brought with them when pursuing the Jews was more than the Jews had gotten in this request to their Egyptian neighbors to give them gold and silver. So it's simply not true that the Jewish people cleared out or cleaned out the Egyptians. There was plenty of gold and silver left, even after the Jews made their request. So again, how do you understand this word, v'nitzaltem es Mitzrayim? So he writes as follows. Havaloshim nitzul v'reikonus ha'omor kan, huladayti b'muvon musori. It's true that the word v'nitzaltem means, as Unkelus indicates, you will empty them out, but it doesn't mean empty them out in a financial sense. It means that you will quote unquote empty them out in an ethical sense. What does that mean? So he goes on to say as follows: the inyano reikonus uptur hischaivus. To empty someone out in an ethical sense means to clean their ledger, to take away any obligation that they have. The way we would say in English, the record was left clean. You now have a clean record because you have discharged any obligations that you have towards the other party. Your record is now clean. Kishoresh nitzal. The word nitzal, which is this, the root of v'nitzaltem es Mitzrayim, Hayore al hamlota v'hasala min hara, yore gam kein b'muvan amusari al chiyuv halove liftor me olav ol masas tashlume chovosov. We find that the word v'nitzaltem, l'natzel, can mean not only to empty something out in a physical slash financial sense, but it can also mean to discharge one's obligation and to be clear and free going forward in that sense. Where do we find that? So he quotes the Pasuk in Mishlei. The Pasuk in Mishlei, Perek Vav, Pasuk Gimel says, Ki basa bekafri echa, if you have come into the hand, the palm, of your fellow, meaning in other words, you've created some kind of obligation where you owe your fellow something, you borrowed money from him, you owe him something. Asay zos, do the following, vehi not sail, and you will be saved. What, in what sense will you be saved? Do the following, and you'll be clean. You'll clear whatever obligations you'll have, you know, you'll reset, there will be amnesty, you know, for whatever obligation you have vis-a-vis this other person. The same word, linatzel, is used when a person is trying to excuse himself for some kind of crime that he's accused of. Margula befuma de inshi, as people say, lomar misnatzel. When a person is trying to excuse himself, the term used is lehisnatzel, that is to say, shemefarek me'olav ol masas chashad b'nei adam, he defends himself from an accusation. And indeed, when a person excuses himself or gives an alibi, the term for that in Hebrew is hisnatzlus, when a person is essentially explaining away what on the surface seems to be some kind of crime or misdeed that the person has committed. The truth is, ad hayom, in modern day Ivrit, if you want to apologize to somebody, you know, you say, ani mitnatzel, you know, I apologize, I'm sorry, excuse me, you know, for having done X, Y, and Z. In other words, the hope is that lehitnatzel means I will, you know, clear the air, you know, I'll give some kind of explanation for why I was an hour and a half late to my own wedding, you know, or whatever else the person is trying to explain. And, you know, the hope is that the other party, hope is that the kala is still there after I was an hour and a half late to my own wedding. The hope is that the other party will accept, you know, the excuse that I made and, you know, will forgive me and, you know, have everything be left clear and fine. Right? So, umizeh omar kan v'nitzaltem es Mitzrayim. That's the sense in which the Pasuk over here speaks about v'nitzaltem es Mitzrayim. Not that you will empty them out financially. Ah, you know, here come the Jews emptying out all the gold and silver in Mitzrayim. You know, it's not enough that they're going free, but they've got to despoil the Egyptians as well. No. V'nitzaltem es Mitzrayim means that you will excuse the Egyptians. You will clear the Egyptians' obligation by virtue of taking this gold and silver from them. And he goes on to explain as follows. Ki kemosha halova mechuyev lahatzil asmo min hachamas, levli hachazik tachas v'shuso momon sheina shalo. Kacha hamalve mechuyev lehishtadol im halova lekufo, im yeshlo uvizodon libo yimo'en lashivas hasamilva lebailov. The Sava Kabbalah makes a very interesting ethical statement over here, one which is not necessarily intuitive. So, consider the following. Shimon borrows $1,000 from Reuven. Okay? So, Shimon has an obligation, a moral obligation, a legal obligation, to pay back that $1,000 to Reuven. Says the Sava Kabbalah, that's certainly true. Reuven also has a moral and ethical obligation to try to push Shimon to discharge his obligation. In other words, if Reuven lends money to Shimon, and you know he knows that Shimon is holding onto the money and refusing to give the money back to Reuven, it's not the right thing for Reuven just to walk away and say, "Okay, I guess I'll never retrieve the money." Right? To the extent to which he can, it's appropriate for Reuven to try to do what he can to get Shimon to pay the money that he owes Reuven. Why? So he goes on to explain. Lo bilvad mipnei tzarcho eleha. Not simply because otherwise Reuven is going to be out $1,000. It's not just selfish that Reuven wants Shimon to pay up. Ki im gad mitzada musari. It's also the ethical thing to do for Reuven to try to get Shimon to pay the money that he owes Reuven. Why? Livli yischazek ben b'nei adam miras hapchisus lios kfuye tova. It's not good if you really care about Shimon. You don't want Shimon to be the kind of guy who takes out $1,000 loan and then defaults on it. Part of Reuven's love for Shimon and part of his moral and ethical responsibility for Shimon is to make sure that Shimon acts appropriately. Right? So in other words, it doesn't mean to take Shimon out, you know, in the back and beat him up till he gives the money. But in other words, when you take Shimon to Beis Din, when you try to do whatever you can to get Shimon to make good on his obligations, you're doing Shimon a favor, and in fact, you wouldn't really be doing Shimon a favor if you let him get away with it. Because then you create a society where people know that they can borrow money and just default on the loan. That's not good for anybody, right? In the end of the day, we want people to live up to their obligations. Ulivli hargel b'nehem mida hagrua lachzik chamas dekapeyem. It's a terrible thing if we live in a society where people take other people's money and hold on to it for themselves. So to the extent to which Reuven can get Shimon to pay back Reuven what he owes, Reuven is actually doing the moral and ethical thing. Reuven shouldn't feel any pang of conscience if he tries to get Shimon to pay back the money, because otherwise what he's really doing is he's setting up a situation where he's basically giving Shimon free license to borrow money and not pay it back, and he's sending the message to Shimon, it's okay, to be careless with other people's money or to be dishonest with other people's money. You're encouraging dishonesty by not, pushing the person to give back the money that he owes. Right, so one of the things that we're going to actually see, not in this piece, but in the next piece, is that, being complicit is to some extent, being guilty. Meaning, as you can see where he's going, the Egyptians on a national level owed the Jews for their labor. So, it's hard to point to any particular Egyptian who owed it, but at the same time, it's not so different than paying taxes. In other words, you're part of a country, you owe the country something, so you pay taxes towards that country. The country, Egypt, owed the Jews for their labor, so the individual Egyptians, were paying taxes, to support the labor that the Jews had given them for all of those years.
But I think we were just talking about economic balance in the economic books, then it would make sense. So the Jews did provide labor, they deserved to get paid, but there were also moral crimes. Babies got thrown into the river, and so how can the slave be wiped clean for all the moral offenses?
Right, so let's keep reading, and we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. Let's keep reading on Sava Kabbalah. Again, money is not going to make up for the moral offenses, but if we look at the narrow financial aspect of things, that slate, that ledger at least, could be balanced. It's not going to, again, it doesn't make up for all of the physical suffering, et cetera, the murder that took place as part of it, but at least the financial part of it can be balanced in some way. Right?
The risk that one could draw the conclusion that
that's it.
Right. Can be balanced with just a payment.
Right. I, the truth is, to some extent, that was the debate after World War II with Nazi reparations. Right.
Reparations.
Exactly. Right. In other words, do we take the reparations or do we say no? You got to pay us, and you think that because you paid us, then so everything is wonderful with the world. Right. So let's see a little bit. He doesn't quite develop that, but we'll see what we can develop based on what he does present over here. In any case, once he's developed the idea that the one who's owed money is actually doing the morally correct thing to try to get the one who owes him money to pay him back. So then he says as follows. Right? Everybody's favorite word in the 21st century. This tikkun olam that's going on over here. If the you know, if the one who owes money gives it back, the world should not be a violent do it yourself kind of place. Since the Egyptians, after all, subjugated the Jewish people for such a long time, and since the Egyptians had at the very least an obligation to pay the Jews for the work which they had performed in Mitzrayim, I mean, there were again many other crimes that couldn't just be paid for, but at the very least, on a contractual level, the Jews had put in X hours of work, they deserved to be paid for the work which they had done. So that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says over here. Level the playing field. Clean out. Clean the slate of the Egyptians. Take back the money that they owe. Right? They should pay back the people they owe. For who reconis musari, this is an ethical emptying. Pturis chayvus, in other words, that exempts them from their financial obligations. Doma l'loshen v'nikisa mishvu asi. Right, as Avram tells Eliezer, if you go out to Haran and you can't find a wife there for my son Yitzchak, you'll be clean. V'nikisa mishvu asi, you'll be clean from the oath which you took. In other words, you'll have discharged your obligation. I can't have any more complaints to you after that point. Right? So we should just note the following, which again it's interesting he doesn't quote this, but you know, I think it supports the basic contention that he's saying. There is a Gemara in the beginning of Perek Chelek in Sanhedrin that describes how many, many years later, in the time of Chazal, you know, there was an individual who wanted to take the Jews to court, an Egyptian individual wanted to take the Jews to court to get back all of the money which they had quote unquote stolen from the Egyptians. And the Gemara describes how a representative of the Jewish people said, okay, if you want to take us to court to get back the gold and silver vessels, we're going to sue you in court for all of the wages that you owe us for the time that we were serving as slaves in Mitzrayim. And lo and behold, the Egyptians dropped the case, you know, and you know, the Jews never heard of them again. The idea that seems to be in that Gemara seems to be very similar to what the Aksav HaKabbalah is bringing out over here. In other words, there's this sort of a tit for tat, you know, that this payment of the gold and silver is meant to be a payment of sorts for what the Egyptians, for the work that the Jews had done for the Egyptians in Egypt. And it's a little bit of a settling of the scores, but, you know, forcing the Egyptians to give what they really owed, which is in their best interest from an ethical and moral perspective. Yeah.
Do we say that the norm of the time was slavery? I don't know, but do we say that? How do we put a price tag on the work that the Jews did? They wouldn't have. They did work, yes, but wasn't it sort of the norm to that backbreaking work that they did? If it wouldn't have been forced on them, they would have never done it. But in other words, how do we put a price tag on that? I'm missing something.
Well, I think the way you put a price tag on it is the way to put a price tag on any work that's done by anybody. I think maybe what you're asking is, you know, back in the good old days, which weren't always so good,
yeah,
people made other people into slaves. That's how it was, you know? But how did a person usually become a slave? Usually they were captured in war. Here, the Jews had come to Egypt at the invitation of Paro, right? They had contributed tremendously to the economy of Mitzrayim, and it was really an about face that they were pressed into slavery. So in other words, even by the standards of the time, it was not a standard procedure whereby the Jews were impressed into being slaves. And in a sense, they really were owed the money, you know, which they should have collected for working for so many years in Mitzrayim. Let me just go back to the Gemara in Brachos that we quoted before. So the Gemara in Brachos speaks about how Moshe Rabbeinu was told by Hashem, Dabru na, you know, even if the Jews don't want to take the money, tell them they should take the money. Right? And again, we asked before, why? You know, why the insistence on taking the money from the Mitzrayim? According to the Aksav HaKabbalah, the following comes out, which I think is, again, a fascinating idea. According to the Aksav HaKabbalah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was so insistent on taking the money from the Mitzrayim because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to clean the slate of the Egyptians. That seems to be a motivation over here. Again, obviously, the atrocities they committed, you know, money is not going to make up for that. But at least on some level, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted the Egyptians to be left clean and in the clear at the end of this encounter between Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim. So v'nitzaltem es Mitzrayim is actually in the best interest of the Egyptians. It's interesting just to tie this together with the pasuk which we find later on in Chumash, lo tisayv mitzri ki gera yisa ba'artzo. Don't hate the Egyptians, because after all they were your hosts, you know, they hosted us in their country, in Mitzrayim.
Which weren't they there before they were slaves?
You know, true.
So
but
the Russian, they treated you nicely before. They
yeah, no. So, but the whole pasuk is a plea. You know, we had a great time in Egypt. It was so wonderful there, right? You know, every afternoon we went to visit the Sphinx, and you know, and we saw the pyramids. It was so nice, you know, beautiful. Baruch Hashem, you know, what Kiger Ha'isa Be'arzo? What are you crazy? So, right? So 1 second. So I think, you know, the Aksav HaKabbalah, I think, again, this is not what he says, but just by extrapolating from what he says, you know, it's at least easier, it's not totally easy, but it's easier to conjure up that sense of Hakaras HaTov to the Egyptians, you know, if somehow the years of slavery are at least balanced by the money that they're giving us to pay for those years. Again, it's hard to say it wipes away the slate entirely, but it's something. You know, it's you know, the Egyptians are able to give us something, and at that point we can say, you know, and you did us a taiva also. You know, you put us up in Mitzrayim, you know, for over 200 years, and you know, we have Hakaras HaTov for the fact that you were our hosts for that period of time. Yeah.
Right. Have said that they were forcibly going to take from the Mitzrayim.
Right.
Why do you say it in such a nice way? And you'll ask them kindly, pay what you. I mean, it shows what philosophy is. So it's not just taking it by force.
Right.
Something.
Right. We're giving you an opportunity. Right. We're, you know, this is amnesty. Yes. We're amnesty, right? You come and pay off your debt. And you know, we'll wipe the slate clean. You know, we're not gonna sue you in the international court, you know, for all the money that you owe us. One last point. Karov lo mashal kavana zo amar rabu stein with derech belief so shasu kemet sudo shein badogim. The Gemara Masechta the Brachos of Testament Beis describes that what the Jews did to the Egyptians is that they made Egypt into a net, a fishing net from which all the fish had been removed. It was like a fishing, they make Mitzrayim into a fishing net from which they remove the fish. What's meant in that expression? The Egyptians had set out a net to catch the Jews, to take advantage of them, to make them theirs. And now, is so to speak, the Egyptians were going to pull the net out of the water, and lo and behold, no fish. What do you mean, no fish? Because everything was equal. Now the Egyptians will see that all that they thought to gain from the Jews would come to naught. That the Egyptians would pull the net out of the water and, so to speak, find no fish. They thought to get a freebie, and here the Jews are basically coming along and saying there are no freebies in life. You worked us for, you know, so many decades, you got to pay up. So at the end of the day, there are no free fish. No free fish, you know, the free fish that they thought to get disappeared when they pulled the net up out of the water. Bez Hashem will pick up after Meir, the second piece from Aksav HaKabbalah. Welcome to the second half of Aksava Kabbalah and Parshas Shmos. The second piece I wanted to see tonight is in Perek Dalet, Pasuk Chof Aleph, where Moshe Rabbeinu has already made up his mind. He's going down to Mitzrayim, he's going to take the Jews out of Egypt. And the Pasuk says, Pasuk Chof Aleph, Ayomer Hashem al Moshe, Hashem says to Moshe, as you go down to Egypt, see all of the signs that I have given over into your hand, right? All of these miracles that you're able to perform. You will perform them before Paro. I will strengthen his heart, and he will not send forth the nation. If you look in the Artscroll translation over here, so Artscroll writes, see all the wonders I put in your hand and perform them before Paro, but I shall strengthen his heart. In other words, the Vav, which we know in Hebrew, Vav can mean and, it can mean but, it can mean a whole bunch of different things. Artscroll interprets it as, I think is, you know, pretty standard, as a contrast to what came before in the Pasuk. The Pasuk starts off saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give Moshe all this artillery, so to speak, to get Moshe, to get Paro to let the Jewish people go. But Ani Achazek Es Libo, but I'm going to strengthen, I'm going to harden the heart of Paro, and therefore he's not going to let you go. That is the standard translation, which is almost universal, I think, in understanding this Pasuk. The Aksava Kabbalah comes along with a very unique interpretation of the Pasuk. Again, you can definitely argue on his interpretation. Most everybody did. But it's a fascinatingly new way of looking at this Pasuk. What's Va'ani Achazek Es Libo? I will strengthen his heart. Pirush, Es Pos Le'echoz Es Libo. I will grab hold of his heart. We know, even in this week's Sedra, right, when Moshe Rabbeinu grabs hold of the stick, for instance, right, Vayishlach Yodo, Vayachazek Bo, Moshe Rabbeinu stretches forth his hand and grabs hold of the stick, right? To grab hold of something is the Chazek, in other words, to grab hold of it. So Vayachazek Es Libo, says Hashem, I will grab the heart of Paro. The Tama, what does that mean? Aviolov tsaros ro'os shiagiu ad levavo. I'm going to send terrible plagues into Mitzrayim to the point where they afflict his heart. V'liyos shehalev hu ha'ever asher mimenu totzos chayim. Since the heart is the source of life, hinei hu achizov atpis babo mevio l'dei sakona. Right, to grab hold of somebody's heart means to put them in a dire situation. If you could, so to speak, literally grab somebody by their heart, it means you're holding them in a life and death situation. Kimlitzas mantfosis lebnei Yisrael belibam. The pasuk in Yechezkel, Perek Yudalid, uses a similar kind of expression to grab hold, tfos, of the Jewish people by their hearts. In other words, to really put the Jewish people up against the edge of death itself. By using this expression, the Pasuk is trying to underscore how stubborn Paro was. That is to say, despite the fact that I, Hashem, will grab him by the heart, meaning, despite the fact that I'm going to put him through Gehenna and back in imposing all of these plagues upon him, nonetheless, all of the tsaros that are going to come upon Paro will not get him to change his mind. He's always going to turn a cold shoulder till the very end to Hashem and not let the people go free. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu from the very beginning to tell Klal Yisrael, you know, that Paro, he's got to be one tough cookie. He's got to be really, really tough, and he's not going to give in for the longest time. So it's important for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to tell this from the beginning, so the Jewish people should not lose hope in the ultimate geula. V'tochal tom tiyah tomi b'Hashem. They'll always put their trust in Hashem. Ki yamod li minez rasam, that Hashem will stand at their right, at their at their right side to help them out. Ulevasof yachnias kashius arpo adshiyisrapsalotziyam chavshi. And in the end of the day, you know, God will eventually wear Paro down, but it's going to take a really long time, despite the fact that Hashem is grabbing Paro by the heart. So what comes out, according to this interpretation on Ksav HaKabbalah, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not artificially hardening the heart of Paro at all, as is normally understood in this pasuk. If anything, the opposite is true. V'ani achazek eslav Paro means, I am going to make life so miserable for Paro, I really want him to let the Jewish people go. And Paro, in his own stubbornness, v'lo yishalak esha'o, will not let the people go free.
It's hard to believe that the Eibishter could think of one punishment that could have overwhelmed Paro.
Oh, he did.
He go through step. No, I'm just saying step by step by step. It makes it sound like he's trying to get it, but Paro wouldn't give in. It's impossible to think that God can come up with the first one if he wanted to, and Paro would have given up after the first one.
Well, it could, but in other words, the question is, would it be fair to impose Makas Becharis from the very beginning?
If it's God's desire to let the Bnei Israel out, do it. But the point is, what he's trying to also to do is to show, like the last part where he was saying, even though it may take time, don't lose your amunah.
Right.
If it happens overnight, you assume that everything that God is supposed to do to you happens overnight.
Okay.
This is a step. It's not always like years.
Right. So I think the why Hashem chooses to do this, you know, is something we can't answer. But as the what, namely that the Ksav HaKabbalah is saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, you know, sending the point is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not trying to get Paro to not let the Jewish people go, which is the way the pasuk is normally understood. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing everything to try to make Paro let the Jewish people go. Again, it's not a lack of power that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has, but for whatever reason, he wants to bring it on Paro slowly. Again, understandably, maybe for the reason you're saying that he wants to train Klal Yisrael in Emunah, or maybe just very simply, you know, he doesn't want to hit Paro right over the head with everything right away. You know, let's do something slower, something smaller, and see if you're responsive. What comes out of throwing to Ksav HaKabbalah is that if we were to translate the pasuk in English, the but would be moved, meaning, the way I think the Ksav HaKabbalah would translate it would be, when you go to return to Egypt, see all the wonders I put in your hand before them before Paro, I will grab him by the heart, but he will not send out the people. You know, despite the fact that I'm squeezing him, right, he's still not going to let Klal Yisrael out until a year has gone by and, you know, the worst Makas Becharos, has been unleashed against him.
I thought that I think that Kelly raised a good question. I wanted to say that, first of all, by Paro refusing, the Eibishter was able to punish him more, and you know, because he deserved it. And that's one thing. Two, that was part of the way that the Eibishter revealed himself to the world and to Klal Yisrael, by showing he punished me, the connected me.
Okay, yeah, very, very good. You know, there are different
this
ways.
This is the way we generally
good.
Understand it. Yeah.
Good, good, good.
How did Moshe
accept it? So I guess according to the Ksav HaKabbalah, this is the pshat, right? In other words, and I guess that's how Moshe Rabbeinu understood it as well. Now he says as follows: Al nom rov hamefarshim yovino melitza zo v'chein mamar v'ani akshe eslev paro ani echbarati eslevo shimei rov risho v'galo pshav ninalu b'fanov darchei atshuva. Now the truth is, the standard interpretation in Rishonim is not like what we just said at all, says Ksav HaKabbalah. There are three expressions that the Torah uses that seem to speak of hardening the heart of Paro. One is here, Ani achazek a slave Paro. Then in Perek Zayin, Ani akshe a slave Paro. I'm going to make the heart of Paro, you know, tough. And Ani hichbarati a slibo. Later on in Perek Yud, I have made his heart heavy. And the Rishonim understand that what that means is that God in some way took away the bechira of Paro. He took away his free will, and that despite the, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sometimes does that when he deems it appropriate, you know, but Paro would have let the Jewish people go free, except that HaKadosh Baruch Hu stopped him from letting the Jewish people go free. There's a very famous Rambam where the Rambam discusses this, the Ram Hilchos Tshuva, you know, speaks out a whole idea that sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes away Bechira Chavshis from a person, he takes away the ability to do tshuva. The Ramban speaks about it, you know, again, all related to this psukim. Says that Ksava Kabbalah, in his opinion, the pshat, you know, avoids the question entirely. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not take away the Bechira of Paro in any way. If anything, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was doing all he could, I don't know if you could say that, no, he was doing an incredible amount to you know, to get Paro to send the Jewish people free. And he writes the Ksava Kabbalah, in fact the Midrashim seem closer to my interpretation than the interpretation of the Rishonim. How so? It's according to the Medrash in Shmos Rabba Perek Yud Gimel Piskovov Lama Haya Kodesh Baruch Hu knows things around the Makos Machar. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends Moshe to Paro, if you don't listen tomorrow, I'm going to send this Makkah. Why tomorrow? Just, if you don't listen, I'm going to send the Makkah right now. Right? Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu give them till tomorrow if you don't listen? So says the Medrash, Kadei Shiachzu Ben, the Yasu Tshuva, is to give the Egyptians an opportunity to listen and to do Tshuva. Right? So says Aksava Kabbalah, according to the standard interpretation of the Rambam and the Ramban, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is hardening the heart of Paro so that he can't do tshuva. What do you mean? I'm giving them time to do tshuva. And if the Mitzrayim do tshuva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just going to harden the heart of Paro, and the Jews are not going to go out anyway. So I don't understand. Do you want them to do tshuva? Do you not want them to do tshuva? From Chazal, says the Haksava Kabbalah, it would appear as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the Egyptians to do tshuva. If they were to turn around after Dom and say, we'll let the Jews go free, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu would say, that's great, wonderful, you know, thank you so much. I really appreciate everything you did over here. And indeed, that's a tremendous chesed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has vis-a-vis the world, that he allows us the opportunity to do tshuva. So it's not as if Hashem is taking away the opportunity to do tshuva. He's doing everything possible to enable the Egyptians and Paro to do tshuva. So says Aksava Kabbalah, that fits much better into my pshat than the pshat of the Rishonim. So with one stroke of the pen, essentially, the Aksava Kabbalah has done away with a major theological conundrum that bothers the Rishonim. The Rishonim wonder, how is it possible that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would take away the Bechira Chavshis, the free will of Paro? How do you explain that? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives everyone free will, you know, and we know they labor to explain it. Says Aksava Kabbalah, you know what the easiest answer to the question is? He didn't take away that the free will of Paro. Doesn't say that anywhere in the Chumash. Ani achazek his leif Paro means I'll grab hold of his heart and I'll make life very difficult for his heart in the hopes that he will actually send Klal Yisrael away. Right? Now, to be fair, this interpretation works a lot better for ani achazek his leif Paro, I will grab hold of Paro's heart, than it does for the other expressions, ani aksha es leif Paro, ani hichbarati es libo. Right? And there I think you'd have to interpret the melitza would be as follows. Not that I will harden Paro's heart in the sense that he will be reluctant to send the Jewish people free, but I will put something heavy on his heart. I think that's how you have to interpret it, you know, in light of Aksava Kabbalah. Ani akshe slave Paro, I will put a weight
on the heart of Paro. In other words, I will burden him with tremendous difficulties. Ani hichbarati eslev Paro also means I have put tremendous weight on Paro's heart in the hopes that he will send the Jewish people free.
Also, I will strengthen him in the sense that he'll survive the Makos until he's ready, not that he's going to die or someone else will send him.
Right, because
at least the nation wants him to sit in Israel or allow them to go.
Right, I'll give him resilience.
Resilience
right.
To survive until he right. decides that he can and will.
Right, so that is another pshat on the Achazek is Leif Paro. Right, in the sense that, and in fact, he goes on to say something somewhat like that in the following sense. So sort of recognizing that the pshat he's giving is unconventional, he writes, "V'gavim nachzik b'dat ha'mefarshim bozeh." Even if we want to adopt the position of all the other mefarshim, the Rambam, the Rabban, etc., that what's being spoken about over here is a removal of Paro's bechira chavshis. The intent of the pasuk is not to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to proactively harden the heart of Paro and sort of tell him not to listen to Moshe. All it means is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not intercede and allow Paro to be stubborn. There's a difference between proactively making somebody stubborn and just enabling them to be stubborn, allowing them to be stubborn. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if he wanted to, could have interceded and, you know, broken Paro. He chose not to. He chose to allow Paro the room to be able to make his own decisions. If you interpret that way, so then the pasuk really is just reiterating the idea of Bechira Chavshis. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave room to Paro to mess up, you know, to be Mechazvek Eslibo, to strengthen his own heart, right? Bottom line, the idea of the Aksava Kabbalah seems to flow from the following basic theological perspective. The Aksava Kabbalah seems very uncomfortable with the notion that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would take away the Bechira Chavshis of anybody, even a Paro. And, you know, starting from that point, the Aksava Kabbalah looks at the Psukim and, you know, understands the Psukim as being consistent with the idea that Bechira Chavshis is such a precious thing that we have, that even in a case like this, you know, it's inconceivable that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would take it away in an active kind of fashion. Okay, I want to wish everyone a good Shabbos. The Bez Hashem will pick up next week with Parshas Vayera.